Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by HackerOne on Federal News Network.
Hackers, the good kind that is, have become an important part of cybersecurity development. Hackers can provide an objective test of how secure a software development is, as well as a lot of other benefits. For more, we spoke with former Office of Management and Budget official, now the Executive Director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation, Matthew Cornelius.
You know, the concept of using security researchers or you know, white hat hackers, as you might like to say, has been around for a long time, a lot in commercial industry. A lot of the big tech firms and now even non-tech firms have been using security researchers to test their systems, to provide vulnerability reports, and to help them improve the overall cybersecurity of their public-facing and, in some cases, non-public-facing information systems. And, you know, to be honest, the efforts that led to what became the OMB memoranda and the CISA binding operational directive, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit, germinated inside government for several years. The Department of Justice did some research around this and tried to look at, legal authorities and providing some sort of safe harbor for folks to actually work within the confines of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act to voluntarily and in good faith provide vulnerability reports to agencies that authorize them to do so. The Commerce Department convened a big public-private sector working group over several months and came up with a lot of best practices and standards, operating off sort of ISO standards on how this would work if it happened in government. And then, that sort of gestated up to the policy level from the vantage point at the Office of Management Budget. We had spent, and we are still spending in government, years and lots of money trying to hire more talent into government, get more cybersecurity professionals in here, credential folks faster, get more qualified applicants, pay them more, try to compete with private sector jobs. And for us, it was really, well, what if we didn't have to pay these folks? What if we made it the policy of the federal government to enable security researchers to come and conduct authorized security research on federal information systems and provide those reports to agencies so that they could better understand their cyber posture? And so that is sort of the quick kind of 90-second overview of sort of where this started from, how it bubbled up, and then sort of where we are now in the process of encouraging good faith cybersecurity research in the federal government.
The implication of this, though, is that the automated and technologically based software testing methodologies to look for bugs, to look for vulnerabilities as you develop code, may be not quite up to the task in total then, correct?
Well, I think the software development lifecycle is never ending, right? Every time there's a new piece of code that goes out there, there's the potential for new vulnerabilities to be embedded in that code. For someone that is doing their best to update or create a new piece of software, or to build sort of larger, information systems or websites, what have you, there's always the opportunity that there are vulnerabilities that folks did not know or did not intend to be in there. And so the principle is you would rather know than not know. And, when it comes to the way the federal government operates, there are plenty of great programs that help agencies understand sort of what's on their networks and what's on their systems, right? There's the CDM program at CISA. There's most agencies have their own sort of pen testing contracts where they have authorized pen testers come in and look for vulnerabilities on their networks and in their systems. But there's something to be said about opening up the aperture and allowing folks who may have new skills or different skills or new ways of thinking about the technology that's happening, the code that's being written, to have them come and take their own look at this. And so long as they're doing it within a framework that the agency understands and authorizes and commits to working proactively with the security researcher to understand the vulnerabilities they found, work with them to help remediate them, that just increases the baseline of cybersecurity across the federal government. So, if you think of, and plenty of people have said this inside and outside of government, cybersecurity is a team sport. Well, you want the best players on the field to help ensure success. And this is yet another way beyond the traditional sort of contracts and government cybersecurity programs to help agencies understand their vulnerabilities and then to remediate them faster and more effectively.
And by the way, this strikes me that there might even be the side benefit in all of this testing of sort of a form of usability testing. As you have people hack at the system to test the code for security, they might also have insights on how well it works as an application fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And yeah, the principle of it all is you don't know until you know. And when you have new people taking a look at a system or a website or what piece of software in a different way, you know, you're essentially sort of crowd testing how that works, right? And if usability is a side product and you get a better sort of customer experience down the line, that's a good thing. And to be honest, like, the best thing the government can do from a customer experience and usability standpoint is to make their websites and forms easier to use and to make sure that they're not open to malicious attack and hacking, right? Because no one's going to want to give their information to the government or to sign up for a program or a benefit or a service on a federal website if they don't feel that their information is going to be secure. So the first principle is sort of do no harm. And the second principle is, you know, if you find something that can induce harm, then to work proactively with the folks inside the government to fix it and to make sure that citizens are going to be best protected when they engage with federal information systems or websites or forms.
Matthew Cornelius, Executive Director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation. We'll be back with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Don't fear hackers. Hire them. That's what the DoD did. Meet HackerOne, the world's most trusted hacker-powered security platform. HackerOne gives organizations access to the largest community of hackers on the planet to find their vulnerabilities before adversaries can. Armed with the most robust database of vulnerability trends and benchmarks, the hacker community mitigates cyber risk by searching, finding, and safely reporting real-world security weaknesses in your digital supply chain, networks, apps, devices, and more. Learn more at HackerOne.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Matthew Cornelius, Executive Director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation. Our topic is best use of good guy hackers in the software cycle. And as a practical matter, do the hackers work with blocks of code or do they work with compiled programs?
Yeah, the way that so there's been a couple of different models that have worked here. So for instance, some of the first movers, even before OMB put out their federal wide guidance on this, you know, there were agencies like the Department of Defense. They've had the Hack the Pentagon program and now the vulnerability disclosure policy that's run by DC3. That's been up and running for several years now, and it's helped the Department of Defense and a lot of the services find and fix a tremendous amount of bugs, right? And that is because they've constantly opened up the aperture for what is included in their vulnerability disclosure policy. So my understanding is that it started with just a few websites and it has expanded to include more and more DoD assets. And frankly, I think about a month or so ago, they just launched their first ever voluntary VDP for folks in the defense industrial base. So companies that are working with DoD can voluntarily sign up to work underneath the sort of umbrella vulnerability disclosure policy that DC3 has to help sort of inform and harden their own systems and to try to find vulnerabilities and fix them on their own networks. So, you know, that is a bigger step, and I think that's somewhere the government should definitely go, and I applaud DoD for doing that. And, you know, the General Services Administration on the civilian side, you know, they set up a vulnerability disclosure policy for the Technology Transformation Service and especially used it on some of their big government-wide programs like login.gov and cloud.gov because those are highly sensitive systems. They use and store, in some cases, lots of sensitive information. And so, you know, those folks have shown sort of what is possible. And the thing that I think is so important about the steps that OMB took back when I was there helping to draft and push out OMB 2032 and then CISA's BOD 2001 is that they didn't say this is a one-size-fits-all thing. You don't have to put everything in scope, but that you have to start somewhere. You have to at least put one or more of your public-facing assets out there and authorize security research on them. And then you're constantly opening the aperture and you're ratcheting it up so that more and more things are under the scope of the VDP. So some agencies have a higher level of maturity and might be able to ingest more reports and remediate more quickly. Some might not have those capabilities. So it's great that the government is pushing folks in that direction, but not saying, you know, thou shalt have every system, every block of code, every piece of software under this immediately right now, because most agencies would just be paralyzed if that was the case.
And review for us the development of the OMB guidance and how that led to the CISA BOD, and just tell us how that all happened. Give us the history here.
Sure. Yeah, this is one of the most collaborative endeavors that I certainly ever participated in when I was at the Office of Management and Budget, and we were working with CISA on federal cybersecurity improvement, sort of operating under the FISMA construct that we have today. And you know, it really the genesis was sort of myself and a couple other folks at OMB, a couple of folks at CISA were like, we really think we should do this, right? We've seen the research, we've seen the results in other agencies, we've seen the results in private sector. What's the best way to do this? And you know, the negotiation basically came down to CISA was going to have to be the agency to operationalize it, right? They've got the people, they've got the technical acumen, but that OMB had to basically set the policy parameters to help make what CISA wanted to do, on the binding operational directive effective. So, you know, the OMB guidance is much more high level. It's explaining what vulnerability disclosure policies are, why they are good, how they can be authorized, how they're different from bug bounty programs, which are much more targeted security research programs that effectively pays individual researchers if they find particular vulnerabilities. And those are still something agencies can do under the framework that the OMB memoranda set, but it was not the de facto standard. The de facto was like move forward on vulnerability disclosure policies. And then, so when we set that aperture, it allowed CISA to go in immediately. I think the binding operational directive dropped the day of or the day after the OMB memo went out and effectively said, agencies, here's your guidance. Like, here's how you do this. Here's our recommended actions. Here's what we're going to hold you accountable for. Here's how we're going to partner with you to do this well. Here's how you get questions answered. Here are examples of best practices that are out there. So it was truly a collaborative endeavor, and I think because of that, agencies felt more comfortable in moving out on this. They sort of understood and were able to get questions answered about potential resource constraints or scope and things like that. So it wasn't just one of these memos that come out of nowhere and force agencies to go do all sorts of actions that they hadn't planned for and budgeted for and effectively resourced and organized themselves for, but instead brought them into the conversation and basically helped OMB and CISA create better guidance. And the other thing is that I think was so important about the OMB memo is we couldn't have done this without the leadership of folks like Leonard Bailey and others in the Department of Justice, because, you know, even with agencies authorizing this research on their websites and agency information systems, it is still, and I'm not a lawyer, so I want to caveat this, it is still technically a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act if someone authorizes an agency information system for activities other than intended use. But what DOJ did is sort of give top cover for agencies and say, so long as you're explicit about what you're authorizing to be done on your systems, and folks operate within the bounds that you set for them in good faith, then we will not seek out prosecution against them, and we will defer to agencies on whether or not something happens that they think is outside the lines or is not in good faith, and they can report that to us. So again, it's not a panacea, right? It's not a clear line in the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act to say that like security research on federal information systems are explicitly authorized, but it did create. It did create the sort of umbrella effect of saying, like, you are secure, you can do this, and DOJ is here as a backstop, but we're not out here actively looking to use this as a way to, like, find hackers and prosecute them or anything
sure.
else. So I truly commend DOJ on that. That was incredible.
And do you feel this also provides some level of guidance maybe and protection for those in the corporate world? I remember it was a number of years ago, but an Intel engineer hacked the system and found all sorts of vulnerabilities. He was totally well-intended. And when he showed his supervisors what he had found in terms of vulnerabilities, they said, thank you, and then promptly fired him, and I think brought in law enforcement. So that's the kind of thing that can happen, but you don't want it to happen, again, given good intentions and agreements on everybody's part.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I want to commend the folks at CISA. At folks like Matt Hartman and Cameron Dixon, who were great partners in helping to roll this out, is, you know, they sort of put the onus on the agency there. They're like, if your vulnerability disclosure policy is simple and clearly worded, and you have both what is authorized, like the research that is authorized, as well as what is explicitly not authorized, you've basically created a good environment for any researcher that wants to act in good faith to do so, right? And the thing is, and when we started down this path, you know, there were a lot of questions from the budget side at OMB and from agencies on, you know, what are we going to do? Like, you know, how do we know that these are good people that are coming to do this and all? And I was like, folks, the bad guys are not waiting for you to pull out a vulnerability disclosure policy to go hack into your systems, right? They're going to be doing that anyway. This is just an opportunity to leverage all of the talent that we've already invested in and the great talent both in America as well as in some cases worldwide to help improve federal cybersecurity. And it's like that is something that we should embrace and encourage and use all the other tools that we have available to us to go after the bad guys and to prevent the serious malicious actions and threat activity from hacking into government networks and systems.
Matthew Cornelius, Executive Director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation. We'll return with the third and final segment of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Don't fear hackers. Hire them. That's what the DoD did. Meet HackerOne, the world's most trusted hacker-powered security platform. HackerOne gives organizations access to the largest community of hackers on the planet to find their vulnerabilities before adversaries can. Armed with the most robust database of vulnerability trends and benchmarks, the hacker community mitigates cyber risk by searching, finding, and safely reporting real-world security weaknesses in your digital supply chain, networks, apps, devices, and more. Learn more at HackerOne.com.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Matthew Cornelius, Executive Director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation, discussing use cases for hackers in the software cycle. And would you say that the experience to date has been positive?
I think from my standpoint and from ADI's standpoint, absolutely. And, you know, the proof is really going to come when CISA starts doing some reporting out on, you know, how many vulnerabilities were found at all of the various agencies that have VDPs. I think they want to move forward and do some experience research on sort of what it was like for the researchers, right? Like ultimately, this is meant to benefit both federal sort of IT executives as well as the security research community. And so, you know, while I believe the rollout has been smooth, and you know, I've poked around various agency websites just to see what their vulnerability disclosure policy looks like. Most of them look very sharp or very clear, and a lot of agencies moved out even before CISA's deadline on this. So I think that is a show of faith that agencies get it. They know what they're doing. They see this as a positive tool in their toolkit going forward. And it will be very interesting when CISA does some of that user experience research to sort of figure out what it was like for the security researchers, right? Like when you reported vulnerabilities, you know, how soon did you hear back from agency X or agency Y? You know, how long did it take to remediate the vulnerability that you reported? If they didn't do it in the time frame that you thought as a security researcher was the right time frame, did they explain why? I mean, that's the other thing, is just because agencies are getting these vulnerability reports doesn't mean that they automatically take precedent over what they're seeing in their pen tests or what they're finding from the CDM program and what they're doing on sort of, you know, endpoint detection and other vulnerability management tools that they have already procured and are already in use at their agency. So, you know, I think it's going to help make the government a better communicator back out to the security research community, and to the extent that that can help federal agencies just communicate better to industry and to citizens generally, I think that's going to be a real positive development and something that we're already seeing, you know, some real sort of positive developments happening already.
And do you see future applications for that model of having outsiders peck away at your system? We found cyber vulnerabilities and bug bounty programs as the initial benefit. What else could this apply to?
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a scope aspect of this. I mean, you know, really for the start of the vulnerability disclosure policy sort of movement that we have now is really about eight sort of forward-facing agency information systems, really it's websites and anything that kind of touches the internet. It will be interesting as this grows, and really this is a test, right, to see if agency vulnerability disclosure policies actually provide real benefit back to the agency sort of information system owners, right? And if they don't, then we can just go back to the old way of pen testing and doing contracts. But if we do, you know, we can see this as a model that can scope itself out. But, you know, more importantly, and this is something that I hope that the Biden administration moves forward on, you know, they've talked a lot of, President Biden has talked about this, federal CIO Claire Martirona has talked about this, some agency heads have talked about this. you know, customer experience and customer service are going to be very important pillars for the Biden Build Back Better agenda and for making government function more effectively and on behalf of citizens. And so to the extent that positive developments in this one very narrow slice of a sort of vulnerability reporting and management helps improve the relationship between federal agencies and industry and the general public, maybe the higher sort of level lessons learned can be useful when it comes to, like you mentioned earlier, usability testing on federal websites. You know, how are we collecting information on forms? How are we making sure that we reduce burden for agencies? And if that leads to things like, you know, making substantive changes to the Paperwork Reduction Act or some of these other sort of foundational federal laws that in some cases inhibit good user research and user experience testing, then I think that tees up the Biden administration to make some, you know, legislative proposals and to work with Congress on new ways to ensure that government is working on behalf of citizens and is providing them a good experience. And that's something I think that both the administration as well as both parties in Congress would be open to and interested in.
Basically, then, this requires a constantly evolving mindset on the part of systems owners and all of the people that can claim ownership of a system. It's a lot of people. And then it also requires that to be followed up with some real policy thinking.
I think so. And like I said, this is the first step on what I think is going to be a long journey to kind of reorient the way we think about federal cybersecurity from, you know, the current FISMA model, which is I'm an agency, I own all my systems, I own all the risk in those systems, and I own all the budget and, you know, contracts that go into protecting those systems. And hopefully that aperture will sort of open itself up. And whether it takes place in more coordination, sort of voluntary coordination between public and private sector on this, whether it leads the Biden administration to think about reforming FISMA to have agencies think about risk sort of across the government versus their own sort of siloed risk, whether improve some of the current kind of security compliance regimes that we have. You know, one of the things that both CISA and OMB came up with, or the idea that we floated back when we were working before the memos and the binding operational directive came out, which is, what if we could do a sort of FISMA swap here? Instead of like all of these metrics that we hold you accountable for every quarter and we force you to do all this manual reporting, you know, if you're getting better results from, you know, establishing vulnerability disclosure policies or running bug bounty programs, and you're actually improving your cyber hygiene and your overall cybersecurity, well, then maybe we reduce or get rid of some of those compliance metrics that are currently there today. So in a way, sort of OMB and CISA are kind of user testing agencies to sort of figure out how we can actually help them improve security versus how we can force them to report quarterly on whatever metrics they OMB and CISA have come up with. So, you know, I looked at this as one of the sort of capstones of the previous administration's thinking on how we actually partner better between industry and government to solve some of these critical issues. And I'm very hopeful, based on all that I've seen in the Biden administration, that they will run with this, they will expand it, and they will continue to consult with industry and find ways to ensure that sort of security and innovation go hand in hand, and security is not an impediment to innovation and to the sort of citizen experience with government.
Matthew Cornelius, Executive Director of the Alliance for Digital Innovation. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by HackerOne on Federal News Network.
Don't fear hackers. Hire them. That's what the DoD did. Meet HackerOne, the world's most trusted hacker-powered security platform. HackerOne gives organizations access to the largest community of hackers on the planet to find their vulnerabilities before adversaries can. Armed with the most robust database of vulnerability trends and benchmarks, the hacker community mitigates cyber risk by searching, finding, and safely reporting real-world security weaknesses in your digital supply chain, networks, apps, devices, and more. Learn more at HackerOne.com.